Hey guys, this week was brought to you by
DMTWClothing.com, the awesome, awesome lifestyle brand we have been working with to expand our brand from just audio podcasts to bigger operations,
stands
merch.
For don't make this weird.
Yeah, they're awesome dudes. They're very invested in building the community and helping us get out new products and more awesome stuff for you guys. So check them out.
And our playmat currently for the podcast is on their website. You can go buy it. And the first 25 have been signed and numbered. So go check it out. Those might be gone. This might be your last chance to get something cool like that. And otherwise, you might be able to get the later ones. Thanks for listening. And we'll see you guys after the intro music now.
Welcome, travelers. We're aware that your journey was difficult, but prepare to have your questions answered, for you have been granted an audience with the Masters of Modern.
And welcome back to Masters of Modern. I am your host, Alex Kessler, here with my co-host, Ben Bateman.
What's up, guys? How's it going? Today's an exciting episode.
Hey, that intro was pretty good. Last week was like, you were all hating on it. There was so much hype there.
Yeah, you were
hyped. I brought the hype.
You were hyped the F up right now.
I've been using the word hype, I think, too much in life. I'm becoming a teenager again.
Yeah?
It's great.
Do you need a hype man?
I do. Oh, yeah. If I could have a hype man behind me at all times, that'd be great.
I won't be your hype
man. I had a hype man on my bar mitzvah.
Did you?
Yeah. He looked like Dennis Rodman.
Wow.
Yeah.
Hype man.
Yeah.
Love it.
He danced. Yeah. All right. So moving on. Today we're talking about, so we've been doing this series. We started with 8th and 9th edition, and then we did Mirrored and Block, and then we did Combat Out. But we're going through all of these sets in Magic's, in Modern's history, so starting from the beginning, moving away to modern times.
Yep.
Today we're doing Return of Ravnica Blocks. We're doing the top 10.
No, it's not Return of Ravnica Blocks.
Sorry.
Ravnica
Block.
You're going to say it literally 900 times
on
the episode.
Everyone, I apologize ahead of time.
With the whole lead up to recording, we've been talking about this for 40 minutes, and he's said Return to Ravnica every single time.
It's not going to stop.
Without fail.
Can't stop, won't stop. We'll try to stop. Regular Ravnica Block, one of the most influential sets in Modern, in Magic history.
One of the most loved, for sure. One of the most loved limited environments, to be sure.
It's like it's the start of the some age of design. I forget the ages and which one we're in, but Mark Rosewater often refers to different ages, and I think Ravnica, he is...
Fourth era, maybe?
So I don't want to go into when each one starts, but basically it's the one where they start thinking of a block as a whole cohesive thing.
Yeah.
And they start planning the block all together. Because if you look before that, specifically a good example is Mirrodin Block. The first set kind of does its thing. The second set does its thing. And then the third set's about 5 color decks and playing as many colors as possible. And it doesn't really make sense.
Yep.
Where RTR was all about planning every set. How does this work? Using cards that you do in the first set, or planning things for the third set that you set up in the first set. Like that whole kind of cohesive block plan.
Yeah.
Really was created then.
Yep.
So yeah, RTR, regular, not RTR.
Nope.
This was though the second most popular set, or second set we ever returned to. So in RTR block,
we returned in RTR.
Yeah.
There you go. That was kind of right.
I got it right.
You referred to the other part as right. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is people reference Ravnica block constantly as one of the favorites of all time. It is interesting as we're going to count down these cards. There's a thing that's consistent now in Magic design, where they've pushed creatures very hard.
Sure.
You can see it in cards like Thragtusk. You can see it in cards, more modern 4-drops. But, they've really made an effort to make creatures good in general. Not better than spells, but, it's just that whole balance.
No, they're better than spells.
So if you go back to some of the early modern sets, even something like Ravnica that's so beloved, you'll notice a bunch of the uncommons and the spells in the 1-3 CMC are all pretty good. You're hard-pressed to find cards for 4 CMC or higher that are actually powerful, powerful on the level that the 1 and 2 and 3 drops are. It's just hard to find. There's no such thing as a Thragtusk type of card, or I'm trying to think of a really good 4-drop creature that's happened in the last couple of years that's mind-blowingly good. What am I forgetting?
Hunt Master. Was a while ago.
And this is also pre-Planeswalker.
Yep.
So it's like a same sort
permanence,
of thing.
Permanence sitting in play, doing stuff, were less of a consistently powerful thing in this time period.
Right. And you can, you can just see it when you look at some of the things that used to be powerful. There's the 4-drop white-green elephant that gains 4 life when it comes into play. 4/4/4.
Sure.
That was a really good standard card. That was a standard powerhouse. That card was very, very good for a long time. It just doesn't compare to things that come out now. Just It's just not even close. And it was a gold card. So I thought that was really interesting as I was looking through every single card in all three sets as I started to get to 4 CMC and higher, which is generally a dead zone.
Very quickly became even more of a dead zone than it normally is.
Yeah, which is normally a dead zone just for me in general with Magic, but
right.
This was like impossible. Anyway, before we get into breaking down our lists, Kessler and I are going to count backwards from our 10th. We should talk about a couple of things. First of all, the podcast's on Twitter.
Yep, it's at the MMCast. I am personally at Kess Wiley.
I'm at Ben Bateman Media.
Which we're pretty much on everything. So if you look up at Kess Wiley on Instagram or at Ben Bateman Media on Instagram or the MMCast on Instagram, we're all there.
Yep. And that's consistent. You can also find our sister podcast, The Command Zone, at the Command Cast.
On rocketjump.com, where we are. So if you want to kind of, there's a comment section there that we never, ever talk about because I haven't figured out a convenient way to have my computer remember my account on their website. So right. I can't respond to people's comments yet. One day I'll figure it out. But it's really cool. You can also see like where we post deck lists. The list from this week's episode will be there. We have a YouTube channel that we're posting video content to.
Yep.
That is on YouTube. You look up Top Teching TV or Webisodes Network / there's a bunch of different things, but look up the Master Modern Podcast. You'll find us on YouTube.
And lastly, I'm going to rattle through the last two things here because we want to get to the episode, but we are working with DMTW Clothing. That is dmtw.clothing.com. They have just released our first playmat. I don't know if there are any left. There's probably a few left. I think there's a couple left for sale, but our first
go get them. They're
signed
sweet.
And numbered product with Kessler on it. It's awesome. They're a lifestyle brand. They're helping us kind of just develop future products and what we want to do with our brand as we continue to expand with more content. So those guys are awesome. Check that out. And then we are on patreon.com. We have a Patreon. It helps us buy gear to do more expanded content, and like we're sending out sweet swag boxes with a bunch of cool stuff in it to our
actually for the Patreon members. They just got the playmat. They got the first they're all numbered, and they get 1 through 10 to get sent to Patreon donators.
Yeah, you guys got the first ones before they actually went on sale. Like I said, I think they may be sold out, but go to the website. It's possible we have a couple left, and there'll be probably another print month that won't be signed and numbered coming sometime in the future, but check it out, and let's get to the episode.
I forgot something. Oh, the Patreon. We talked about it.
Just
cool.
Talked about it.
All right, sweet.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. We got 10 cards. Nice. 10 non-return OG Ravnica.
Nice.
Dissension and Guild Pack.
Are you, like, refusing to even say it? Now,
Ravnica,
point
City
of, not...
of Guilds. Maybe I just make sure I say City of Guilds every time. Oh, that's something we didn't talk about. Ravnica is the first set that established color names.
The guild concept.
Color combination names.
Right.
So, like, now every color combination, other than the four color combinations, which we might get in the command product this year, but...
Right.
We got guilds. We got Selesnya, which is green-white. Rakdos is black-red. Dimir, your favorite, blue-black.
Blue-black, yeah.
Orzhov, which is black-white.
Rakdos.
I said Rakdos.
Orzhov. You just said both.
Simic, which is green-blue.
Azorius, which is blue-white.
Is it, which is red-green.
Did you say Boros already?
No, Boros, red-white. Golgari, which is black-green.
I think you said that already.
No. Selesnya, green-white? We said green-white.
Gruul, which is
green-red. Gruul, which is green-red.
I think that's all.
I think we did them. Yeah. That's amazing. Everyone points to us. All right, top 10 lists. So yes. The way this works is we do our top 10, we break it down, we go 1-to-1, see which ones are more
higher
relevant and correct, and then you know, normally in these set releases, we actually do our top 5 favorite cards that don't see a ton of play but we think should see more, and then
or just
those
cards that just didn't make
the cut
thing.
Yeah, and then those we battle off, and on Twitter you can actually vote, and the winner gets to buy the other one dinner. I think won every single time and plan to continue doing so.
He's saving up for a car, guys.
Yeah, it's gonna be great. All right, number 10.
You want to go first or should I?
Yeah, I'll go first.
Okay.
Electrolyze.
That's your number 10.
Yeah. Oh, it's okay. A blue, a red, and a colorless.
Yeah.
It does 2 damage to up to as many target creatures that you can split them in between.
Or players. Yeah.
It's kind of planeswalkers because it can go to players. Though it's weird there.
Yeah.
You can't do it to a player and a planeswalker. You can only do as much damage as you do to the player, the planeswalker. Because that's
how
that works.
And then you also draw a card.
And you also draw a card. And it's an instant. So that card's really sweet. It kills. It so often is a 3-for-1 that it's really good.
Yeah, it's one of those weird cards where, like, it was sweet when it came out and people liked it, but... It got better over the years, and then in Modern, it didn't start out as a card that people played.
Yeah.
It became a card people played about halfway through the design of the format, where it was like, oh, you know what? Like, I'll take it. I can, if I can kill Bob with half of this, that seems pretty good. Or like, what are some of the
other? It's also like it's the blue red counter to Lingering Souls, because
that was one of the prices that got really good.
Lingering Souls, black and a colorless for 2/1/1s is a battle card. So this gets half the card that Lingering Souls is, which makes it playable. So you kill one of them for the same amount of mana, and you draw a card off of it, and then they get a card. It's kind of like a perfect, like, we're now breaking even on this card.
And just as Modern developed, there was just like so many decks that wanted to play, like Noble Hierarchs and Birds of Paradise.
And Infect plays just all of the different X1s. And Affinity, this card's nuts against, because you just kill most things in their deck. Like, this card's very good.
It's good. It's definitely like one of those weird situations where you don't see a lot of four ofs of this card.
It's a three mana spell.
Yeah, it's very rare to see four of them.
And
but
it's
like,
pretty specific at what it does. It's okay, because at worst case scenario, it's 2 damage to target player. You draw a card for 3 mana instant speed. So you can hold up counter magic, and if you don't have anything to do, you just kind of dome them for 2. But like, it's, you don't want like 6 of these in your deck.
It's wild to think how much better the fact that, okay, so Forked Bolt is 1 red for 2 split as you choose, right? So it's the red half of this without drawing a card. And even at sorcery speed for 1 mana, that card sees virtually no play in Modern. So at 3
Which
mana,
I think is actually unfair to it. I think it could see more
card
play than it does.
But it's wild that the fact that this draws a card and can be played at instant speed makes it like a shoe-in to many decks at two more mana than Forked Bolt.
It's also a gold card, and gold cards are a little less played. Now, what's interesting about Electrolyze and what's interesting about Ravnica Block in general is that this is a card that would be in the top 4, top 5 of almost any other set on our list that we could ever do this for, but Ravnica Block is super stacked.
It's super deep.
What's your number 10?
Well, I'll tell you in 1 second. Last thing I'll say about this card. Well, no, I'll save it because it's also on my list. It's just higher. I'll tell my story about this card when I get to it. My number 10 is Leyline of the Void. It is one of the original 5 ley lines.
In this set?
Yeah.
These are the first 5 cards that had if this is in your opening hand, it enters play in the start of the game cards ever printed?
Yeah, I think that sounds right.
Because Gemstone Caverns was the next set. It was in
that was in Time Spiral
Block. Then the second ley lines and the Eldrazi cards were much later. So, yeah.
Yeah. Sweet. The 5 original ley lines were Leyline of Life Force, Leyline of Lightning, Leyline of Sanctity, Leyline of Singularity, and Leyline of the Void. This one states, if Leyline of the Void is in your opening hand, you may begin the game with it on the battlefield. If a card would be put into an opponent's graveyard from anywhere, exiled instead, costs black, 2. It's sweet for a lot of reasons. It's one of the effects that only, it's not parallel. It only affects your opponent's graveyard.
Right.
Starting with this in your opening hand is such a sweet free roll. If you're a deck that wants your own graveyard and wants to play,
I mean, it sees play in Living End decks where like it makes their graveyard strategy their opponent's doing just gone, and also makes Living End this like insane board wipe that completely exiles all cards that they have. So they played a lot against creature decks where, like against Zoo, where they don't want to like, you know, they're going to be killing their creatures anyways, but now their creatures stay dead.
Right. Yep. I am a big fan of Leyline of the Void. Not a card that I play that often, but I definitely like it a lot.
One of the reasons I didn't put it is like it's kind of sometimes the amount of space it needs to take up in your sideboard is pretty massive, because like to play a Leyline correctly, you need to be playing like 3, because you want
to
have a high chance you'll pick.
I mean, it's so much better
3 to 4. Right.
Yeah.
And Rest in Peace kind of does a lot of what this card does with a little bit more of the consistency and taking a little bit less up in your sideboard slot. Though it does hurt you. You can't be doing graveyard strategies. But I do think this is way better now because Dredge is seeing so much play in the format.
Yeah.
Dredge is this like, Dredge out of nowhere has become a tier 1 deck in Modern. And by out of nowhere, it's just been doing that for the last 2 months, and we have, you know, we're there now. But like, this is a card that people should keep on their list of things to play, especially if they have their own graveyard strategies.
Has anybody ever messed around with a Leyline Nykthos deck? Is that a thing that like people have tried?
I have a deck on my phone that's trying to do that. It's not good.
Yeah, it seems
there's
really
a bad. There's a opulence. Well, because you could also play the new
the 5 drop,
the Nyx card that makes all enchantments if you have X
drop
amount. Yeah,
1/1 white, 4
colors. Opulences.
Starfield of Nyx.
Yes. All right. So moving on. Number 9. My number 9 is one of my favorite cards probably of all time. Okay. Life from the Loam.
A little higher on my list.
Green and colorless. It reads, return 3 cards from the graveyard to your hand. And then it has the ability...
3 land cards.
3 land cards, sorry, from your graveyard to your hand. And it has Dredge 3. So for those who don't know, and it'll be super relevant for tonight's episode, the Golgari's main mechanic from this block was Dredge. And that was Instead of drawing a card, way too powerful, one of maybe the most broken mechanics ever printed. What it read is, if this card is in your graveyard, instead of drawing a card, you may return this to your hand instead and mill, so take cards from the top of your library and put them in your graveyard, equal to the number. So this has Dredge 3. And so instead of drawing a card, you may return Life from the Loam to your hand and put the top three cards of your library into your graveyard. Dredge is also one of the more complicatedly hard to learn mechanics for someone who doesn't know what it already does.
Yep.
It's very intuitive once you figure it out, but before you figure it out, like when someone explained to me what Legacy Dredge was the first time I ever saw it, it took me a good 30 minutes to figure out what they were saying to me.
Well, yeah, it's super weird. Like it, and there's also a lot of tricks with Dredge because it triggers when you would draw a card, you may. So there's like, it's not just the thing where like the obvious way Dredge works is during your draw step, you can dredge instead of draw. But now if you have a deck that has like interesting like cantrips, you can be like, okay, well I'll do this and I'll draw on the first draw, I'll dredge on like. It's very awkward and weird and complicated.
Well, beyond that, like you have to reference a number. It replaces the draw step.
Yeah.
Instead of triggering off of a draw step, it does so many weird things, which sometimes graveyard. But so the reason Life of Loam is so great is it's one of the cheaper dredge cards. It automatically goes to your graveyard. So instead of having a creature, which is on most of them, three is relatively high. But there's just so many shenanigans you can do with a continuous sort of looping your lands.
Right.
Everything from assault. Not assault formation. Assault. The red, discard a land.
The 3-mana one or
yeah,
the 1-mana?
3-mana one.
Seismic Assault.
Seismic Assault, where Seismic Assault reads you do 2 damage if you discard a land card, so you can just loop lands doing 6 cards, basically 6 damage a turn for 2 mana with those 2 cards together. You know, in older formats, there's really powerful things you can do with stuff like Wasteland or even Strip Mine if you go older than that. There's cycling lands in older formats. That's kind of why this isn't as high as it normally would be in older formats, is that a lot of the really, really, really powerful things you can do with Life of the Loam aren't in Modern.
Definitely. I mean, in Modern, it's historically good. It is historically good in the aggro loam decks, which were ported from Legacy.
Right.
So, and those Legacy decks, though, one of the things that made them so good is you had Mox Diamond. You don't have Mox Diamond in Modern. So it's actually Bronson Magnon won the first Modern Grand Prix in Grand Prix Lincoln, playing aggro loam with 4 Life from the Loam. That's the most famous Modern finish, I think, ever.
Well, it's seen more play now because it is a piece. The other thing that's important is in dredge decks, the way dredge works is it replaces your draw step.
Yeah.
Which means that what your starting hand is, you shouldn't draw a card ever again after that starting 7. So like you really only get those 3 lands, hopefully. Life from the Loam lets you kind of make your land drops after turn 3.
Right.
So a lot of dredge decks play between 1 and 4 Life from the Loams just because it's on the dredge plan. It's like, you know, worst case scenario, on turn 2, if you have nothing else to do, just play Life from the Loam because it can start your dredge chain.
Yeah.
Even if you're not getting lands back. And, you know, it's good with fetches. Like, it does all these little cute things. It's good with, like, Hedron Crab because you can start milling yourself. It's definitely a sweet card.
For the record, I'm not the biggest fan of dredge. It's, like, Kessler's favorite mechanic ever. So this set is, like, funny for that reason. But anyway, moving on. My number 9 is Ghost Quarter.
Mine's not on my list?
Yeah, I figured it wasn't. Ghost Quarter is...
You figured it wasn't?
Yeah, Ghost Quarter.
That wasn't on my list?
Yeah.
No, it's higher on my list.
Oh, Ghost Quarter is.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, interesting.
I'm not going to say where, but it's, yeah.
Yeah, Ghost Quarter. It's an untapped land that taps to produce 1 waste mana, colorless mana.
It's colorless.
And you can tap it sacrifice it and destroy target land. That land's controller may search his or her library for a basic and put it into play untapped. So
this is the best wasteland variant in the format.
Yeah, it's funny because, again, this is another one of those cards that in the beginning didn't see that much play.
Well, because Tectonic Edge kills, which is another card that is a land that you can sacrifice it to kill a land, is better in formats where mana gets higher. Ghost Quarter is just, the format is so quick that it doesn't get to 4 mana.
And if you play it, like, I became very familiar playing this card when I played Superior Burning Cocoa because it was a deck that existed on 2 or 3 mana so often that I was just like, man, this card is sweet. Like, with Ethervile and, like, all of these effects I collected company where I don't need that much colored mana, I can get away with playing 2 or 3 of these in my main. And, like, it's obviously sucks to go down a land, but, like, when you're playing against Tron or you're playing against, like, Infect...
Yeah, there's so many powerful man lands in this format that it basically is another removal spell that you need. You need to be able to get rid of... You know, everything from Celestial Colonnade to Inkmoth Nexus
to
Mutavault to
the blue black unblockable 3/2.
Right. So there's so many different cards. Creeping Tar Pit. He was giving me this face of like, I need to know what this card is called, and I don't remember. you know, these are important. Like, every deck has man lands pretty much in the format. I can't, like, unless your deck is so hard on your lands doing other things, which then makes this card good also. And this isn't even getting into the shenanigans you can do with Ghost Quarter.
Yeah, well, because you can tap it to sacrifice, to destroy one of your own lands, and then you bring in another land untapped. So you actually can color fix by going down a land that turn,
yep,
after you've tapped to use that land. So
And there's even, like, in Eggs decks back in the day, they used to have Ghost Quarter, and you would Ghost Quarter your Darksteel Citadel, which is the indestructible artifact land. So you would not lose that land, still get the land, but then on top of that, by playing the, I think it's not Open the Vaults, but the whatever.
Second Sunrise,
where you put all cards that went in the graveyard that turn, you get your Ghost Quarters back, so you actually get to go up on mana, two mana every time you use that loop. And the other one is the Aven Mind Sensor combo. And Leon and Arbiter, where you make it so your opponent can't search their deck, and you Ghost Quarter them. So it's like straight up strip mine.
Yeah, it's super sweet.
Which, along with Thalia, makes it so you're never going to cast a spell again.
I tend to actually end up with one to do Ghost Quarters in most main decks, with usually a third in the board. That's usually is my style. But
it's like, it's the most generically easy spell land to kind of go after.
Yeah. All right, what do you got for number 8?
Spell Snare.
Okay.
No drum roll. One mana, counter target spell.
You're literally jumping ahead. Like, you're gonna have, like, stomped on my entire middle of my list by the time I get to it.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Maybe the reverse on my end. So Spell Snare is a 1 blue counter target spell that costs 2.
Yeah, it's one of the few, like,
it's like the 4 efficient cheap, good counter spells in Modern.
Well, it's also just one of those, like, unique cards that it's another card that you're very, very rarely ever going to see 4 of them in a deck, just like Electrolyze. But, like,
right, it's which is kind of why it's so low on my list.
It's so good when it's good. It's so good when it's good, and in a format like Modern, where 2-drops really are so important. Like, I mean, this card's even better in Legacy, but, like, in a format like Modern, it's. Yeah, it's sweet. Like, hitting Bob, hitting Tarmogoyf. Like, it's just...
There are so many powerful 2-drops. It's worse now than it was actually before Splinter Twin went away, I think. Because, it's really good against Snapcaster Mage. Yeah. B, it's really good with Snapcaster Mage.
Yep.
But there's just so many cards. Like, this format has slowed down, so people are playing a little bit more 3-drops.
Right.
Even... They're not playing as many, but they're definitely playing more than they used to. So having Spell Snare is a little bit more of a liability, because it's not always going to be a live card.
Yep.
What's always also interesting to me is... If I have Spell Snare and Mana Leak in my hand and someone casts a 2-drop, which is the better choice to counter them with? Because it's not as much of a slam deck as you think. Because, yes, Spell Snare, they might not cast another 2-drop for the rest of the game. So I should Spell Snare it. But Mana Leak is going to be dead in 4 turns. So this might be the best chance for me to use Mana Leak, and they might just top deck a Tarmogoyf later in the game, so I should hold on to Spell Snare. So you get this choice where, like,
because
which
it's,
is...
It's a conditional hard counter.
Right.
Whereas I think I would still always play the Snare early, and I would always sandbag the Leak. I don't think I would ever play the Leak early, but I hear your reasoning, and it would be very... Yeah.
Like, a Tarmogoyf on turn 5 is just as good as a Tarmogoyf on turn 2. Maybe even arguably better.
But trading a card to make them pay 5 for a Tarmogoyf is, like, still better than them doing something else that turn.
Sure.
So, I don't know. My number 8 is Electrolyze.
Okay.
And my story about Electrolyze, quickly before we move on from it, is those of you that listen to this podcast frequently know I'm obsessed with cantrips. I'm obsessed with things that instant speed, that are gold-colored, that have optionality. Like, I just love cards that have, like, lots
of... versatile.
I just love cards with lots of bells and whistles. Like, Deathrite Shaman's one of my favorite cards ever for good reason. Electrolyze is that card, and from the moment I saw it, I always loved Electrolyze, and I had a playset or 5 of these, even though I didn't draft back in Ravnica, but I just accumulated 4 or 5 of these.
There are full arts of this, aren't there?
Yeah, I have one.
Sweet.
I have a foil full art, I think.
Yeah, well, I think that's there's your only option.
No, there's a non-foil, I'm pretty
full
sure.
Art?
Full art, yeah. Really? And I think there's also...
A foil one?
Yeah, there's also the IDW comic book variant you can get that was, like, in one of those comic
books.
Yeah. There's a bunch of versions of this card that are sweet. I have some cool version in my highlighter deck. I can't remember which one. Anyway, the point is, Electrolyze is awesome, and I held on to, like, my 4 or 5 copies of this in my binder for literally years. Even when I sold my collection off, this card wasn't good yet, so I didn't get anything for it. And then finally, it was like, oh my god, Electrolyze is like $4 or $5, and then it got reprinted.
Womp womp.
I still have my originals, though. Anyway, moving on.
All right, number 7.
Yeah.
Lightning Helix.
Higher on my list. You're literally going down the list.
So, for those who don't know, Lightning Helix is probably one of the more famous cards in Magic, but it's a red and a white for Lightning Bolt and gain 3 life. But for do 3 damage target creature, player, and gain 3 life.
It's one of those weird examples of a card where...
Two colors make a different color?
Yeah, well, not only that, but, like, where you'd be like, okay, Lightning Bolt, great card. Healing Solve, terrible card. And you'd be like, why would I want to pay 2 mana to make my Lightning Bolt worse and add Healing Solve to it? That sounds awful. And then you're like, it's so good.
It's so good.
It's so
good. Well, because life gain is really good. It's just not good by itself.
Yeah.
Just gaining life is bad, but accidentally gaining life is great. Like, yeah. Look at, like, Thragtusk, for example. Thragtusk, if it just gained you 5 life, would be bad. But the fact that it does all the other things, like,
yeah.
Baneslayer, lifelink as a mechanic is very powerful, and that's because you're doing something and incidentally gaining life. Because life is gaining life is great until it's not. And Lightning Helix is Lightning Bolts 5-8,
yeah,
with a little bit of an effect that sometimes just turns other decks' plans off. Like, how do Burn has a terrible time against the Lightning Helix because you're 2-for-1-ing them.
It's also life gain is a very interesting form of tempo because you're often in a position in formats like Modern or Legacy that are very, very, very quick and very card for card, like high impact cards. You're negotiating a couple of turns very specifically in a lot of decks. Delver decks, Burn decks. Like, you're really counting. It's really like, if things don't change, if they don't resolve this or pick up this card, I'm going to kill them. I'm going to do this 9 damage in this many turns. So you can really mess things up by, like, killing a creature and gaining 3 life off of 1 card.
Right.
And that's where it really comes down to, is it's just like, you can change the math so drastically in a format like Modern.
Because part of it is also just, like, when Lightning Helix good. When it's bad, it's okay. It's decent.
It's just Lightning Bolt.
It's just
for more
Lightning Bolt and you gain 3 life.
For more money.
Yeah. I guess, like, the worst situation is against a control deck where you just gain 3 life, that won't matter, and you do 3 life to them, that won't matter.
Yep.
But that Bolt is not much better in that situation. And when it's great, though, it's, like, against Delver, where you kill a Delver and you gain 3 life.
Yep.
Like, they're now, like, almost 3 cards behind you from that 1 card you just spent.
Yeah.
Against Burn, same kind of deal. Like, it's so powerful that it gets you so far ahead.
Yep.
Yep. And once again, all 4 of the cards I picked in any other set would be in my top 5.
So that was your number 7?
That was my number 7.
My number 7 is Life from the Loam. Life from the Loam.
So I just, like, kind of
Yeah, you literally just slid up by. I have no love for Life from the Loam, actually. Like, I chose a Dredge card because Dredge is very powerful. Grave Troll would have been my other option.
See, that's interesting that Life from the Loam specifically you have no love for, because it's such a unique, cool card that does, like, 8 different things.
That's why it's on here.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you like Life from the Loam, but you just, it's not like... It's
I didn't
not
put
as,
any other... I, okay. Spoiler,
you have
Grave
no love
Troll,
for Dredge.
Grave Troll's not on here. Neither is Stinkweed Imp.
I feel like you can't. Okay.
No.
All right, do your thing.
Grave Troll would be the one. Yeah. So I put on Life from the Loam because I think that the ability to... Like, Grave Troll is the engine for a deck. Life from the Loam is a unique card that a deck could not exist without. You can try to make Dredge work without... You can try to make Dredge work without Grave Troll. You can try.
Yeah, you just...
People have
I
done
did.
It.
Stinkweed Imp.
Yeah. You can't make...
It's way worse.
You can't
worse,
make like an aggro loam deck work without Life from the Loam. It's the only one.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have it. Effects like Seismic Assault are so powerful because of Life from the Loam. That's very, very important. And so I think because it is 2 mana, it is unique. It, like you said, you can play it on turn 2 and start your engine. It's not as clunky of a card to me either. Like Grave Troll.
Well, this is one of the prettiest. It, from a design perspective, cards I think that's ever been created.
Yeah,
it's like so elegant.
Yeah, it's just great. Like not only that, but like. This card can just be good at different times in Magic. Like, 2 mana to get 3 lands from your grave if you're playing a bunch of fetch lands is draw 3. Like,
yeah.
It's a draw 3 for 2 in some cases.
I'm just talking about, and this is a commander thing, but the card Tithe, which is if your opponent has more lands than you, you get 2 planes from your deck and put it in your hand for 1 mana, is like, I don't think I've ever lost a game in Commander where I've cast that card. Just because 1 mana draw 2 cards, even though they're lands, is still 1 mana draw 2 cards.
Yeah, yep. So Life from the Loam is my number 7.
How many 2 mana draw 3 cards are there, period?
Very few.
Yeah.
None.
So, speaking of Dredge cards, my number 6
is
Golgari Grave Troll.
Okay.
So, a few things. First off, when Life from the Loam is good, it's great. When Golgari Grave Troll is good, it's tier 1 format breaking.
Yeah, right.
The fact that, like, and this goes for kind of, like, Stinkweed Imp is kind of, like, shuffled in, kind of how sometimes we, like, put cycles of cards all in one slot.
Yeah.
But Golgari Grave Troll is also better because for 5 mana, getting a, like, 8-8 that is impossible to kill
right.
as soon as you untap is also just generally good.
Well, there is that part of Grave Troll that's very good. I mean, the fact that it's a powerful creature when it's resolved in a Dredge deck is very good. It's
right.
just, like, I don't... It does happen, actually. That's not a lie. It happens.
In modern, in Legacy, it never happened. Oh, that's not even true. In Legacy, there was a period sometimes. Where they just got rid of all their big threats, and Golgari Dreadful was the big threat you reanimated, because Legacy Dredge is a much more reanimator deck that you're using Dredge to just... Because the point of Dredge, if people don't realize this, Dredge is the most efficient way ever printed to get lots of cards in your graveyard.
Right.
Excluding, like, stupid combos like Hermit Druid. This is, like, one of the most efficient ways... Instead of drawing a card, you're drawing six cards. That's kind of the point.
Right.
That's what Dredge does. Is it all your cards in your deck are graveyard interactive cards, and you can get to them from your graveyard. So when you dredge six, that means you're drawing six cards instead of drawing one. So that's one of the reasons this card is so powerful. Beyond the fact that, you know, 5 mana for a 9, you know, anywhere between a 4/4 to a I think I've gone in a 20/20 Golgari Gravetrol before that then has regenerate as one of its abilities is like just very insane.
Yeah, I mean dredge six, that's, you don't have to say that much.
Yeah,
more.
Yeah,
it's like a lot.
And I guess the last piece on this card is I think this is the only card on my list that was banned and was unbanned.
Yeah, though hilariously enough, the unbanning took how long before it became a good deck?
Yeah, a while. and that's because the real card that needed to be banned from Legacy Dredge is still banned, and that's
Dread Return.
Yeah.
I just tweeted from the MMCast account, what's the sweeter card, Life from the Loam or Grave Troll? I'll be curious to see what the poll is.
Oh, yeah. Did you do like a two-hour poll or an hour poll?
In a way.
It's just, never mind. All right, let's continue. What's your number six?
My number six is Spellsnare.
Uh-huh.
Not a card that I've ever had like a lot of success with. I've played it as a one or a two of in tempo decks, and it's good when it's good.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of a boring inclusion, but it's necessary.
It's definitely in the top 10. I think for the same reason, that's why mine's a little bit lower.
Yeah.
So generally, I like to switch it up when we get to the 5 point, and you start doing the first card every five.
Okay, my number five is Court of Calling.
Oh, mine's also on my list and way much higher.
Yeah.
I guess not way higher because we're at five. So
we're at five, yeah. Court of Calling, it's a very unique card. I remember playing this card and against this card in Standard. Court of Calling is one of the rare, modern tutors, no pun intended. Because it's also rare. It is green, 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 X, instant, with Convoke. Search your library for a creature card with converted mana cost X or less and put it onto the battlefield, then shuffle your library. This card wasn't good until they banned Birthing Pod.
That's blatantly untrue.
Was it part of the Birthing Pod deck?
It was a 4 of in every Birthing Pod deck.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, well, so it wasn't good prior to the Birthing Pod deck becoming good? Was that what it was? This card was a nothing card that was not played in Modern for like a very long time, and then
As long as Birthing Pod was seeing play, this was seeing play, and I would doubt that it wasn't seeing play before that. It just, the deck wasn't a tier one deck like Birthing Pod was.
I like have a distinct memory of when this card spiked in price, and all of a sudden I was like, oh, Court of Calling. That card's legal in Modern. I've always tried to make that card work.
And it was because of Birthing Pod.
Got it. So,
yeah. Really, but Birthing Pod deck was a pretty big pillar of the format pretty early.
I don't think it was that early. Birthing Pod became like
Modern's only 5 years old or like 6 years old, so like
yeah, but like I seem to
within
remember
within the first 2 years Birthing Pod was a deck.
Okay, so then sure, if it took 2 years for this card to be good, then that's
sure.
2 years that this card didn't see play, so that's probably what I'm thinking of. I mean, it does make sense that,
but
then,
that's also an era where no one knew what they were doing in Modern, like,
and so then once Birthing Pod was banned, this card became even more important because Collected Company replaced Birthing Pod, and then
becomes the tutorable piece instead of the value
the
piece.
The primary
yeah.
card. This card is great for a number of reasons in Modern, one of which is that it works so well with Wall of Roots.
Yeah.
That's one of the big ones for decks.
This
like,
works with any deck that has a bunch of creatures that you're not necessarily attacking with, but you can play tap. The fact that it's an instant is also insane.
Yeah.
And sometimes you just like, the reason it's so good in Modern is you're often just finding a two drop and they have to counter this. They can't counter the card you tutor for
because
it just comes into play. It's really good.
Also, this as well as seeing play in Birthing Pod style decks with a Collected Company now, this sees play in Elves, which is another one of the big spots that it's so good. It's just
any
unique.
Green creature deck that has a tutor need should be playing this card.
We flipped out over Traverse the Ulvenwald because as well
which
as
is seeing play by the way.
Traverse the Ulvenwald and Eldritch Evolution
because
it's very rare to have a good tutor in Modern, like a creature tutor.
And I would argue that Court of Calling I'm going to blatantly say that this is a better card than either of those two cards.
Eldritch Evolution remains to be seen, but Court of Calling is it remains to be seen. Court of Calling is a really good card.
Yeah.
It's number five on my list. That's what I have to say about that. I have a story about Court of Calling.
Okay.
I have a story. I've told it on here. I believe I've told it on here before.
Well, then no, we don't want to hear it.
Oh, really?
No, no, I'm kidding. You can tell your story.
It was my first.
You're just so excited that I wanted to.
It was my first.
Kind of,
I know
the parade
I've told
a little bit.
But I just like the story because I was playing against John Laux in my very first regionals ever back in like 2006 or something like that. 2005.
If you don't know, John Laux is the creator of the Grimoire deck.
No, John Laux.
Oh, Laux. Okay.
Yeah, he's worked for Wizards
different
for a
John.
While. He's part of one of the great designer searches. He was a writer at Brainburst when it was Brainburst, still before TCG Player became what it was. Anyway, it was during Dragonstorm era, and I was playing that Joyra of the Gitu, Ophidian Eye, Niv-Mizzet deck I've talked about before. It was basically just the Dragonstorm deck minus the tutors and the good cards and replaced with Niv-Mizzet, Ophidian Eye, and Joyra. And I was like trying to go infinite, like it was just bad. Anyway, point is, he was playing Project X, which was a standard deck at the time they'd come up with, went infinite with Safi Eric's Daughter, Crypt Champion, and some life gain type of creature. When a creature comes into play, you'd gain infinite life, right? Soul Warden or something. And I was like playing, and his deck like didn't match up well against Dragonstorm because they needed like to go off on turn 4 or 5. And I remember just like he like thought I was gonna go off on turn 4 with Dragonstorm and just kill him, and then I was like, resolve Joyra of the Gitu. And he just like sighed, like huge sigh of relief. And then he killed me like a turn later with Court of Calling into Crypt Champion.
Okay.
And I read his article about his tournament report like 2 days later. And he like told that story in his article.
Okay.
Thought this guy was playing Dragonstorm. He was playing a bad deck. I beat him the next turn. I was like, God, I'm so angry.
Anyway. All right. My number 5.
Yep.
It's this card. We haven't talked about it yet. It's called Ghost Quarter. We Sweet. Talked about it already.
Yeah.
It's the strip mine of Modern. I think I talked a lot about it when we talked about yours. It's really good.
Yep.
It's better than any of the other variants.
It got even better when they printed a bunch of sweet Eldrazi that need colorless mana.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just really good.
Yeah. It's just a good card.
Yeah.
It's also another well-designed card. This set is so full of well-designed cards.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Number 4.
Lightning Helix.
Okay.
Talked about Helix already.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really good.
Best use of Helix.
Oh, I didn't really. I mentioned it briefly, but I didn't say it fully. But like what I was talking about is, and Mark Rosewater is the person who kind of brings this up, is that, you know, red is a card and white is a color. Neither of them could do Lightning Helix on their own, but black could. Lightning Helix is a blatant. It's probably too powerful for what black could do. Black couldn't do that for 2 mana.
Well,
but
it would be worded differently.
Well, no, there is the card do 2 damage to a target creature or player and gain 2 life. Is a card that exists.
I guess you're right, actually, now that I think about that.
No, it would be worded exactly the same. It's a black card, but it's red and white because red and white together can do a black ability.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Interesting. Fun fact. All right, my number 4.
Oh, and the last thing about Lightning Helix, one of probably the 3 best cards.
Oh, it's actually the only playable full art card I own.
What would you say are the top 5 cards ever to put Isochron Scepter with?
Orm's Silence.
Chant, Orm's Chant, Silence.
Mana Drain.
Sure.
Counterspell.
Counterspell.
How
about modern ones? Silence?
Silence.
Leak?
No. Remand is better than Mana Leak.
Sure, Remand.
Because you draw the cards. Worst case scenario, you're always just going to draw cards with it.
Maybe like Boomerang for 2 mana every turn. They can't ever play land again.
Yeah.
But I would
in
say...
In modern, I would give you mana... Lightning Helix.
It's one of the more famous ones to put on. Put on an Isochron Scepter. It's one of the
cards. Well, of the cards I named, the best ones on it aren't good without it. So this is theoretically better than Orm's Chant as a card.
And unless you're me, you're not going to play Boomerang in Modern.
Right. So my number 4.
Yep.
Speaking of things that are better than Lightning Helix with Isochron Scepter, Remand.
Wait, that's number 4 for you?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Oh my God, what am I missing on my list?
I don't think you're missing anything.
Oh my goodness.
I'm not going to spoil my number. Okay, number 4, Remand,
so
for people
exciting.
That know. Okay, blue and a colorless.
Oh, wait, no, I know. Yeah, never mind.
Counter target spell.
Yeah.
You were so excited, now you're so unexcited.
I realized there was a later card in my list that you haven't said yet. Yeah, keep going.
Blue and green. counter target spell.
Blue and green.
Sorry.
Blue and a colorless?
Blue and colorless.
Everybody knows what
you've
Remand
derailed
is.
Me so many
if
times.
If you're listening to our show and you don't know what Master what
you counter
Remand
spell
does.
Returns their hand and you draw a card. It's awesome. It's I think the best counter spell in Modern.
Yeah.
By a wide not a wide margin, but definitely the best counter spell in Modern.
Yeah.
I think I can pretty confidently say.
What are the better counter spells ever printed? Force of Will, Counterspell, Mana Drain, Daze. That it?
Memory Lapse isn't better. I would play this over Memory Lapse,
yeah,
probably.
Yeah, right there.
Because me having a
5/6
close.
Right in that 5/6
like,
range.
Cryptic Command is up there, as but it's not two mana, so it's worse.
It's really good, but it costs 4 in triple blue.
Yeah, no. I mean, obviously it's up there. I put it on the top. I mean, this is one of the most powerful sets ever printed, or blocks ever printed, and it's in the top 3 cards in Modern.
Remand is 4th on
top 4 cards. Sorry,
wild.
Yeah. Top 4.
Spoiler, it's number 3 for me. So,
We're doing your number 3, so let's...
Yeah, so we're still there. I mean, Remand is just one of the... Like, Remand is, again, if you tack on draw a card to anything that's even remotely sweet, I love it. So
this is onto, like, Venser's ability, which is sweeter.
I've loved Remand forever. I had the FNM foil for a long time.
Nice.
It's very expensive now.
Another cool thing about Remand is it's, like, the best anti-counterspell, because you can return your spell to your hand, draw a card, and counter their counterspell with it.
Yeah,
so you like it's like draw
cards.
Two, and then it's another all the versatility. It's so unique. It's so kind of elegantly made.
Yep.
All right. What's your number 4, 3? Is
number
Remand?
Number 3 was Remand.
All right. So my number 3.
Yes.
This turn?
Yeah.
It's Court of Calling.
Okay.
I think of all of the cards on this list, it's the most likely to have a chance of being banned within the next 3 years. Maybe.
Yeah. I mean, I'll give you that. Just because it's such an enabler.
Arguably. The best deck in the format of Modern, one of the top 4 best decks in Modern, have been playing a playset of Court of Calling in it for almost its entire existence as a format.
Just for the record, Life from the Loam is crushing Grave Troll right now. 81%.
Okay, fine.
Yeah, I did use the word sweeter card.
Yeah,
so.
That's cheating. What is the better card is a different conversation. Court of Calling is up there. We talked about it already.
So I already said my 3.
My main story was that it is the most likely to be banned. That's
right.
My main thing I saved in my pocket for the time I was going to talk about it.
It's a
really efficient tutor that makes combos probably too good that are green. All right.
So we have 2 left each, and I pretty much
the chances
positive.
That they're not the exact 2 cards.
So we'll start with number 2.
Okay.
Dark
Confidant.
Dark Confidant, Bob. 2-1 for 2. He's a human wizard, black and a colorless.
What is Bob's real? Robert?
Bob Mayer. Yeah.
Cool.
At the beginning of your upkeep, reveal the top card of your library. You may put it into your hand. You lose life equal to its converted mana cost.
Yep.
It's just one of the most busted cards ever.
It's part of the 5. Each color has their representative 2-drop creature. This is the black one, alongside Stoneforge Mystic, Snapcaster Mage, Tarmogoyf, and... Young Pyromancer is currently the red one. That
I had a lot
everyone.
Of Great Revel is like the other.
There's like red. Red's having trouble figuring this one out.
I feel like it's. Yeah, I feel like Eidolon of Great Revel has a strong.
Young Pyromancer sees more play in different decks. Like, if you want to go for versatile red drop that you can kind of throw in a bunch of decks versus Eidolon, like, you can put it in a black white red tokens deck. You can put it in a blue red tempo deck. You have to be playing spells, but like it's red. You're playing lightning bolt.
You can put it into a silver fur partisan heroic deck that plays lots of lots of targeted.
I'm not saying the deck's good, but you definitely could put it in there. We're not talking about Young Pyromancer. We're talking about Dark Confidant. But my point is, of the 5 cards I just listed, 3 of them are maybe 3 of the best cards ever printed. This is at a tier with them.
This is
one of the best creatures ever printed. It's really, really good.
Along with...
I can't impress among how good it is.
So what's better, Bob or Snapcaster?
Snapcaster Mage.
Through and through?
Through and through.
Not even close.
And I think most people would agree with me.
Yeah, I think I would agree with you. They're both invitational cards is the point I'm trying to make. How many invitational cards in the end got printed before they stopped doing it? I know that Solemn Simulacrum was an invitational card, right?
How many of them are there?
I know
there's a lot. You're gonna like Rakdos
Augur Mage, the black red one.
There's Sylvan, the one that you sack a land to give a creature shroud is one.
Oh yeah.
There's like weird ones that you're not gonna remember because they're not
ancient, right? Or is that a Great Designer Search card?
Forgotten Ancient. No, that's a no. That's a the You Make the Card community card.
Oh yeah, I'm mixing that up. Right, Aether Mage's Touch is the same thing.
Yeah.
Vanish into Memory is a card I was trying to think of. But
that's another one.
Invitational.
No, that's a You Make the Card.
Yeah. Anyway, the point is, of all of the invitational cards, unless I'm just completely whiffing on a card right now, those are clearly the 2 most powerful.
Solemn, it's never been a modern staple, but I would put Solemn in a, because of Commander more than anything, and Standard play, it was one of the really powerful ones. The white one.
John Finkel was a...
Shadow Mage Infiltrator. Yeah. But there's the 3-2 that gets you 2-1-0-1 drops.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's right. Ranger of Eos.
Ranger of Eos is another one. There's, like, really good ones. But, like, obviously, Bob and Snapcaster Mage are the two.
Bob was the broken one before Snapcaster got printed.
And then Snapcaster got printed.
Yeah, they're the two. I mean, Bob's really good. Bob was a card. He's a card that if you don't. Okay. If you look at it before you understand Magic, like, if you're a new player and you look at this card, it's hard to understand why it's so good. Because.
Which, other than Snapcaster Mage, you could probably say Stoneforge Mystic looked really good to people that were bad at Magic. For everyone that was good at Magic, looked really bad until it got way too good.
Tarmogoyf took like 2 months to catch
Tarmogoyf
on.
Tarmogoyf is one that no one knew was good.
Pyro, I think, was like a fun card. But
Pyromancer people pretty... Pyromancer's inclusion on this five list comes...
Both of the red cards are significantly weaker than the other four. Like, there's no question.
Yeah, I agree with that.
The red cards are like 11 percenters, while the others are at least 60 out of 100. Like, the red cards are good, but, like, not even in the same conversation as the other four.
Except for this one.
This card?
No, the conversation we're having.
Oh, sure.
They're in this conversation. We're talking about them.
All right. Last card on the list. It's, I think, a cheat because we're both in the same.
Yeah.
The Bounce Lance, right?
Definitely the Bounce Lance. It's 100% not the backbone of the modern format.
Yeah. Shocklands. Shocklands. I considered the possibility of choosing a specific one to put on here. Like, is there one shock?
Steam Vents.
Yeah.
Followed by Overgrown Tomb.
Yeah.
The two best color combinations of modern.
Yeah. And then from there, it's... I don't even really know, honestly. After that, it gets a little more even. Maybe maybe Hallowed Fountain.
Yeah, I'd say Hallowed Fountain's third. Which, like, if you look at it, Snapcaster Bolt, Snapcaster Path, Abrupt Decay.
Yeah,
the
weird.
Three best removal in the removal situations. I guess after that is Misty Rainforest, Blue-Green.
Breeding Pool.
You still do the blue ones, which is really interesting.
And then the last blue one.
Red-Green after that.
Yeah.
And then, I guess Blue-Black isn't that good. Blue-Black would be much farther down.
The cheapest and worst one being White-Black or Black-Red?
No, I think it's Blue-Black.
Really?
What blue-black deck do you know of that's good in modern?
I just mean it has blue in it, so I'm just assuming.
I know, but I can't think, like, Grixis, which is, like, very new to the scene and plays, like, one.
It plays, like, one, yeah. Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I mean,
White-black has Junk and Abzan. Green-black, same deal. Red-white has a ton of stuff. Like, all the other ones have good stuff.
I mean, the whole conversation, like,
they're all really good. Yeah.
The thing is, they're specifically good, though. Because of Fetchlands.
Yeah.
And you have proposed the idea before that if we were to get rid of Fetchlands...
Shocklands would see less play.
And the format would maybe be better.
Yes. I agree with that. But I blatantly think that statement is true.
It will never happen because it would tank the format.
Better is a strong word. Tournament play would be better.
Yeah.
Because of all of the shuffling. And I do think the Shockland, Fetchland mana base is very homogenous.
Yeah.
I think it takes away a lot of... like. We often discuss doing an episode on building mana bases, and I'd actually love to hear your guys' on Twitter thoughts on us doing an episode about building mana bases, but we always kind of miss it because it's always kind of like, well, there's a pretty obvious step-by-step process because it's not that hard. You just put X amount of fetch lands, X amount of shock lands, some spell lands, and a dude. So, like,
yep,
it's very homogenizing. These cards are obviously amazing. They would still see play because, like, cards like a card that barely was on my list, it was number 11, was Farseek.
Yeah.
And it's not on my top five, our underrated five. So, like, Farseek finds fetch lands. That's what was when the fetch or shock lands were RTR block. Like, that was the thing.
Yep.
Everyone played for Farseek. It was one of the most important cards in the format because you could play any color you wanted.
All right. We have one last exercise to do, and this is our honorable mention fight.
Do we have a timer? So we get is it a minute or 30 seconds?
A minute per card.
30 seconds.
30 seconds. And we are going to be battling our five honorable mentions. We're going to be putting up all of the polls on Twitter for you guys, I guess, tonight, tomorrow.
When the episode goes out, so
when
tomorrow morning.
When the episode goes up.
By the time you listen to this, it'll be... You only have a day, though, so this is, you know...
Go to Twitter and vote. I always end up losing by, like, a hair because I always pick cards that are, like, a little bit more, like, sweet than Kessler's cards.
By sweet, I think he means not as good.
So I'm going to start off with a timer right here. Kessler, you're going to go with yours. Ready, set, go.
I'm starting?
Yeah.
Oh, my card's Suppression Field. Oh, don't me. I think this is one of the more underrated sideboard cards. Basically, it says that activated abilities can't be activated unless you pay two extra mana. It's an enchantment for one and a white. It wrecks decks. Like, how does Affinity beat that card? And, it's another thing in the family of white decks. I think we're in a world where there aren't enough decks that are playing a super powerful activated ability, but as soon as we do, this card is one of the best decks, sideboard cards. It's your next Stony Silence.
All right. Very good, Kessler. I will be fighting...
It's my softball, by the way.
Ready?
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to be fighting for Protean Hulk, a card that actually has an argument of being the top 10. Protean Hulk is a combo card. It's green, green, and four. When it dies, you search your library for... I can't even offhand remember exactly, but I think it's power up to six or converted mana cost up to six. It's converted mana cost up to six. There's a combo with this where you can search your deck for an instant win.
Yeah, this is
combo.
The body double deck.
Yeah, the body double deck. It just wins. Just straight up wins.
It's like a real deck.
This it's an actual card. Deck that people win with, and this isn't in one of our lists. So like Protean Hulk just like straight up wins the game. I don't know how. I mean, it's hard. It's too good, but sure.
In previous times, we allow people to read what the card does, and we both kind of did cards that in the beginning. Do you want to continue with that?
Stop making up new rules, Kessler.
What did you, do you want to read what your card is? I mean, you had that problem, too, where you like didn't get to read what your card does.
And you then you read have... what yours did.
I know.
Yeah. So I guess you got less time.
Okay.
I'll read mine, sure, just so people know.
Yeah.
So, because I think I was off.
All right, so on Twitter, Suppression Field versus Protean Hulk. By the way, I'm playing this like baseball. This is going to be a sports metaphor, everyone. Get ready.
Oh, it costs seven. It's green, green, five for a 6/6 beast. When Protean Hulk is put into a graveyard from play, search your library for any number of creature cards with total converted mana cost six or less and put them into play, then shuffle your library.
I actually like that. Why don't we read what the card does after we pitch it?
Okay, great.
That makes it so it's not being spoiled.
Sweet.
Cool. All right, my next card.
Okay, 3, 2, go.
My card is Coiling Oracle. It is a blue and a green for a when coiling Snake Elf Druid. When Coiling Oracle comes into play, reveal the top card of your library. If it's a land card, put into play. Otherwise, put that card into your hand. It is a 1/1. Here's the deal. This is the closest thing Modern currently has the Baleful Strix. It is also like one of the premier tempo plays because you put a creature into play. Hopefully, you're playing equipment somewhere in your deck or some other way to make it sweet. But you get the draw card. We talked about how drawing a card is better. And sometimes it's even better because the card you don't want to draw is a land, and that goes right in the play. You ramp it as well. It's Farseek plus Baleful Strix.
Well, one mistake you made there, Kessler, is that you said you had to put another card into play to make this card sweet. So, unfortunately...
I'm pretty sure the card is sweet. It's a 1/1. You got to make it sweet.
All right. My...
Oh, I also read what my card did. I
number
cheated.
Number two
I took my time up. No!
Dark Blast. Dark Blast is an instant for one black. Target creature gets -1/-1. It has Dredge 2. So Dark Blast, you can play it and then replay it. Or Dredge 3, actually. There are great tricks with Dark Blast where you can be like -1/-1. And then you do it during upkeep. And then during draw step, you dredge and get it back. So you can go -1/-1 again. It's just like generally a sweet card for black decks that want to play kind of a tempo game. There's lots of X1s in Modern. Like we've said, the Electrolyze. Dark Blast is underrated. Should get played more.
All right, so I feel like you're discounted because you said you hate the mechanic Dredge. Yep. Get out of here. That's my mechanic. All right.
Okay, we should actually, before we continue going, make sure we know the matchups correctly for Twitter because we've done this wrong before.
Okay, well, I got my list exactly how I'm going to read
it
so it's
Hulk,
up to you.
It was Hulk versus...
Well, you know, don't write the verse. I know the verse. Just write your number one and two.
Suppression. And then it was, what was your second card?
Coiling Oracle.
Okay, great.
All right, sweet. All right, number three.
Go.
Infernal Tutor. This is a 1 in the black. Reveal a card from your hand. Search your library for a card with the same name as that card. Reveal it, put in your hand, and shuffle your library. If you are hellbent, which means you have no cards in hand, you get to tutor for any card. I think this is one of the most underplayed tutors in the format that does some stuff that's really sweet. It's a storm staple in Legacy. I think we can bring it back. Once again, toolbox cards are the sickest.
Toolbox.
Let's do a tutor card. This one's awesome because it either makes what you have better or what you don't have even better.
That's... And you have one more second.
Oh, sweet card.
That's a sweet way to sell something where you only accentuate the positives and ignore the negatives. You're just like, the things you said, you're like, it only makes things in your hand sweeter or makes that your hands
yeah.
not sweet.
If you got two, you got one, you got two. If you're playing a card in your deck, why wouldn't you want two
why
of them?
Why no one plays Infernal Tutor? Reasons number one and two. I've tried to play Infernal Tutor so many times.
Get out of my life. What's your number three?
All right. My number three. I have to decide what I want to fight against that. Okay. I'm going to fight.
See, this is unfair. You're switching what you're doing
Glimpse
around.
Glimpse the Unthinkable. Blue, black, sorcery. Target player puts the top 10 cards of his library into his or her graveyard. It's the linchpin of the mill deck. It's the best self-mill spell you can possibly play. It's unique. They've never printed anything as powerful for two mana for this effect ever. Like, they've never seen like an effect, a functional reprint, and I don't think you will. This card's amazing. And with Snapcaster Mage, you can just build straight up aggro mill decks, like actually just mill you to death, which I've done. They're awesome.
That was good. You were perfectly timed. You missed the fact that this is like a deck. There's like a mill deck. that's out there.
Yeah, I know.
This is the first time more of your cards are like real decks.
How does it feel, Kessler?
It was great. Infernal Tutor and Calling Oracle are sweet. All right.
Go.
My fourth card is Teza, Orzhov Scion. That's one black, white, and it does some sweet stuff that I'll read after I explain how cool it is. This is a card that is just a removal spell on a stick and makes every time a black creature you control die into sweet, sweet value. It is one of the most value-oriented legendary creatures probably ever printed. Once you get this engine online, how do decks beat it? I actually don't know why this, like, as a singleton or two of deck sees play in Abzan Company, you're going to get so much value off of this card. And it answers everything. Everything dies. Bah. And so what she does, I get to tell what it does now. You did this once. It has too many abilities for me to say. It's a legendary creature, human advisor, 2/3. Sacrifice 3 white creatures, remove target creature from the game. When another black creature you control is put into a graveyard from play, put a 1/1 white spirit creature token with flying into play.
Yeah, it's okay. I've seen people try to play this in token decks before.
Yeah, this would be sweet. All right, what's your number?
All right.
D.
My number five, my number four, is Hunted Horror. You guys have heard me talk about Hunted Horror on here in the Hunted Hansen deck. It's black.
Roll my eyes in your general direction.
Yeah, I'm going to even spend my time describing it. It's black for a 7/7 trample. When it comes into play, your opponent puts 2/3/3 green creatures into play that have protection from black. If you have anything to stifle and enter the battlefield trigger, it's a 7/7 trample for 2. If you have anything to destroy tokens, it's a 7/7 trample for 2. It's a 7/7 trample for 2. This card is unique and sweet, and so many fun things can be done with it. I love this card.
How many ways are there in Modern to stifle?
There's Torpor Orb. There's
stifle. Okay, I'll give you Torpor Orb. Fine, that's
Torpor
cheating.
Orb. There's Sundial of the Infinite, which makes it one turn slower. There's...
I don't think these are stifle
Trick
effects.
Bind.
These are
there's
other things. All right, we're moving on.
There's the white card that does the same Torpor Orb thing, the flying 3-drop, the new one.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of ways. Lots
and
lots
of ways. Those aren't stifle. Those are getting rid of Enter the Battlefield effects.
Yeah, to stifle...
That's what stifle does.
The actual definition of the word stifle is to like trip something up. So if you trip up the enter battlefield trigger.
I roll my eyes in your general direction.
All right, your turn.
Also, Leyland of Singularity doesn't work anymore.
Ready, Freddy, start.
My number five is Doubling Season. That's an enchantment that doubles all of the things. Literally all of them. Specifically, Planeswalkers. Cast Doubling Season, then cast a Planeswalker, go ultimate instantly. The best thing to do with this is probably Jace Architect of Thought, where you can then cycle into four Jaces, get the four best cards of their deck, and get one Embercoil on top of it, and win the game. Because he cast it, so you get another turn. It's the sweetest. Any other Planeswalker is good with too. I have more time. It's so obviously how good Doubling Season is. So what Doubling Season does, it's a 5-minute enchantment that... if an effect would put one or more tokens and or counters on a thing, it does that twice.
It's so cool how you can play this on turn 3 and then curve Jason. It's a 5-drop.
It's called...
Crazy. It's a 5-drop. That totally... Yeah.
It's called counterspells.
People have tried to make this deck work.
People play...
It's totally, totally sweet. I have tried to make this deck work. My fifth card is a little card I like to call Rise Fall. Rise Fall is one of the most underrated sorceries ever printed in the history of Magic. It's a double-sided card. One half of it bounces a creature from the battlefield to their hand and gets a creature from your graveyard back to your hand. Fall is a kind of like a mini Hymn to Turok, but you can choose which side. It's great in Grixis Delver decks. It's underplayed. I've always just been a big fan of Rise Fall. That was like 24 seconds.
It's not my fault you didn't start the timer. That's your fault.
Rise Fall versus Doubling Season. I know which way that one's going. There you go, guys. There you have it.
For the record, I wrote my list of the exact order I was going to be doing this ahead of time, and you definitively changed what you were telling based on what card I was giving you.
That's ludicrous.
I put Suppression Field first as a softball because I thought you'd put your best card first, and you may have. So let's see how this goes.
Ludicrous.
This is called baseball. You got to like plan your lineup ahead of time.
All right.
All right. So that's how the game works. Go to Twitter, vote, see who wins, and we'll tell everyone next week who won. Yeah.
That's that.
Yeah.
Guys,
thanks, guys, for listening. Make sure to check us out on Twitter at the MMCast.
And check out the Command Zone on
RocketJump.com.
And, of course, check out DMTWClothing.com, the lifestyle brand that is helping expand our brand. Those guys are awesome. Thanks for listening, guys. We'll see you again next week.
What?
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to the MMCast@RocketJump.com. See you later, alligator.